What the hell is going on here, intern Dom? I know that's a broad-based question, and I apologize for that, but I'm not apologizing for anything else today. I can tell you that. I'm in a rotten mood, and I'll tell you why. Because I pride myself on being informed. People often ask, well, how do you prepare for the shows? Like, how do you, what's your method? And I say, well, I watch the games, I read, I hear, I talk to people, I'm informed. That's basically the job, is to be informed and then come on the air and give opinions and solicit feedback and talk to callers and talk to Bob when he's here, which is, well, hardly ever, and talk to City Limits, although he's not here either. Intern Dom is in his place. I'm informed. That's my job, is to be informed. Yesterday, I was sadly not informed of a big development. And the way it used to work when I was predominantly writing, like a beat writer, if I would get beat on a story or I would miss something, I'd be up all night in a hotel ruminating over it. Why did this happen? Well, something happened at this station yesterday that had me ruminating all night. We had a pretty good show. Myself and intern, he's not an intern. Myself and Sean Myers. Are you still an intern?
No, haven't been for 2 years, but...
What's your official title?
Dom. Part-time producer Dom.
Part-time producer. When does that become full-time?
That's a conversation for the next
another
few months.
Day.
Yeah.
Whenever or if you graduate from Syracuse. You're
right.
The 8-year plan, I understand?
Yeah, just about.
The Carl Krauser plan at Syracuse? You'll be done...
Can't you think of anybody else who's been in college for longer than Carl Krauser?
No, can you? The kid from, where was it, Florida? Was there for 10 years because of COVID?
Yeah, the Florida State guy.
He was there at
Miami.
He was playing football or trying to at Miami longer than Tomlin's been in Pittsburgh. I mean, it was incredible. So here's what happened. We had a good show, I thought, yesterday, especially for a comeback show after a week literally in the mountains of West Virginia. Did you hear about that week I had, Don?
Yeah, I heard it was a good week.
That's not good enough. Did you hear details or are you lying?
No, I was golfing yesterday, so I listened to as much of the show as I could, but...
Can you name one thing I did in West Virginia?
You had a very nice dinner at that one restaurant.
No, didn't happen. You're lying. That's Malzahn disease, and that's what Limits is suffering from. For all I know, he went to some rehab center for a secret treatment this week. I don't know where he is.
So you didn't have dinner
whole
week?
No. If you don't know something, just say, I don't know. I don't know how your vacation was. No, I was in the mountains. I was telling Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers. I was rappelling off rocks, like giant rocks that are the size of buildings. I would go up tethered only to a rope and then fly backwards, and they would catch me. You didn't know that, did you?
No, you're like Spider-Man.
Tell me the events you would or wouldn't have done that I did in West Virginia that you would do. Would you do that one?
How high were the, like, we're talking skyscraper height?
We're talking climbing this entire building right here.
No, you could convince me.
And then rappelling backwards just into the air and having somebody catch you on a rope.
You could convince me as long as I trust the equipment being used.
Sweat Lodge spent about 2 hours in the equivalent of a sauna and melted down to a puddle. Would you do that?
No, that doesn't even sound healthy.
It was really healthy.
For 2 hours?
Very cleansing, I might add.
Did you feel like a new man afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh.
Felt great the next day, very cleansed.
Not for 2 hours.
Swimming in, first of all, going into a cave and then jumping in the cave in the dark into freezing cold water and swimming out of the cave into the light.
Absolutely not.
No?
No.
What would you be afraid of in particular?
The jumping into something in the darkness? Absolutely not.
That's what scared me too. Part of the idea was to confront your fears in life. And I know you have a lot of them, and I think you need to go on this journey next year with
me. I don't have a lot of fears.
Yeah, you have some.
Jumping into something that I can't see, it's not a fear, it's, you know, me being a smart human being.
Isn't that life? Aren't you jumping into your future not knowing what will happen, and are you doing it fully committed, ready for anything? Expect nothing, be ready for anything. Are you doing that? No, you're not.
I'm producing the show, so yeah, I am.
That's actually a pretty good point. Anyway, here's what happened yesterday. After I'm off the air, Andrew Filippone is on, as usual. Mulsey's off playing golf again. And he starts with a Paul Skeens quote that was, I wouldn't call it incendiary, but I would call it way more than notable. It was basically Paul Skeens telling the world he didn't think the Pirates did enough and they need to do more. So I'm then driving around in my car, and it's like a resentment. When I get a resentment, it starts out like, ah, this is nothing. And then it builds within me like strep throat or something. There's nothing I can do about it. And by the end of the night, I'm a madman having imaginary conversations with people who aren't there. Have you had that experience?
Every now and then, sure.
So how did this happen? How did this Paul Skeens quote happen on the post game where he basically said we needed to do more? That's essentially what he said. We didn't do enough. We're not doing enough. Do something, please. Essentially, we'll hear the quote in a minute. And I started thinking, whose fault is this? Is it my fault? I don't know. Do I need to listen to every post-game show and pre-game show? I listen to a lot of it. Like I said, I pride myself on being informed. But I didn't, I'm sorry, I didn't listen to the Sunday post-game. Then I thought, is it Seth Meyers' fault for not scouring everything? He's culpable here, isn't he? Partially culpable?
Listen, I'm not going to attack a fellow producer.
No, but you'll attack Pomp anytime you want.
I don't attack Pomp.
You've attacked him twice.
I keep Pomp in check. I'm like the guy that
has
to...
All right, then I'll say it. Maybe Sean is implicated here. Maybe. Dan Zangrilli did the post game, and he texted me before the show yesterday. First of all, I complimented him. I said, what was I listening to? His pregame. I said, great pregame. And you sounded great on play-by-play last week. Didn't you think he sounded great?
I thought he sounded excellent.
Are you lying? Did you actually listen?
No, I even tweeted out. I thought, like, genuinely, I thought he did a fantastic job.
So did I. So very complimentary. So, and this was yesterday, or Sunday, after the pregame. I tweeted him. I said, great job. I particularly love the minor league thing where they go around to all the different broadcasters from each team. Wonderfully produced by Dan. He says, thank you. And he sends me a clip, but it's of Charrington. And I said, why did you send me that? He said, it could make for, you know, good fodder for us this week. Well, thanks, Dan, but you didn't send me the Skeens clip or tell me what Skeens said.
Okay, so we got to the bottom of this.
No, we didn't. Not yet and not even close. So Zangrilli is definitely implicated here. Thirdly, do we have a system? I don't know how it works behind the scenes. Like, what if Paul Skeens had said the other day after the game, I want out, I want to be traded? What is our system for making sure every host knows that was said? Every show knows that was said? Is there not a producer conglomerate here where you pass along things that were said?
So this was on the pregame, you said, right?
No, it was on the postgame.
The postgame?
Yes.
So we have a system here where an email gets sent out by who's ever producing whatever show.
Okay.
And they're supposed to recap everything considerable that happens on the show.
Okay.
So an email was sent out.
Right.
Sunday at 5:45.
Okay.
For the postgame.
What did it say in the email?
Written by Joel Nelson. He writes, I'll read the whole paragraph.
Oh my God, now Joel's implicated. Please read the paragraph.
Joel writes, Paul Skeens joins the show, where he discusses his insane numbers from this season and his young career.
Jolie, you buried the lead, but go ahead.
As well as his time at the All-Star festivities earlier this month, interacting with Clayton Kershaw.
And called out Pirates ownership, but go ahead.
He then shares what he's enjoyed the most from his Pirates pitching staff and team. End of paragraph.
Okay, Jolie is a culprit here, and I love Jolie, and I apologize, Jolie, for doing this. An email should have been sent out to all the producers of every show and every on-air personality. In fact, texts should have been sent out that Paul Skeens just basically called out the Pirates for their offseason. I hate to say it, but Jolie seems to be culprit number one, although I'm also implicating you.
What are you talking about?
You need to be monitoring these things.
Absolutely not.
You're one of the conglomerate of producers, are you not?
I wasn't producing yesterday, was I?
So what? You should be reading and you should be getting ahead of the game.
All right, well then how about I tell you? Well,
then when you saw it, you should have emailed everybody else and said, oh my God, I'm the one who spotted this. You could have been a hero and maybe gone from part-time to full-time.
Then I guess I made a mistake not telling you that Joe Namath declared he was going to win Super Bowl III, because now we're just pulling out old quotes.
No. You work here right now.
Joe, I wasn't producing yesterday.
I don't care.
I was golfing yesterday, something you should appreciate.
Oh, yeah. And guess what? Listen to this, everybody out there. And I have three witnesses to this. Joe Potocnik from JP Roofing and Siding, who was here this morning. Ben Skoranek. What is Ben's last name?
Tenuta.
And Marty Tuffer, John Calipari's old roommate from Slippery Rock, or Clarion, I'm sorry, when they were both in college. We go back there at like 9:25, so 35 minutes before Dom is producing this show. And what is he doing? He's literally lounging in a chair watching Walter Payton highlights.
Oh, you're so full
Explain
of it.
Explain that one, big boy.
You're
no,
so full
that,
of it.
That's
no.
a fact.
No.
That is a fact.
Not a fact. I got here at 8:20-ish. I came in. I said good morning to Crowley and Doran. Said good morning to the jerk-off producer who's comes in before me. And then I went to the back. An hour and a half before I technically have to be here, got all your live reads ready. I put together
a
list
of... Gee, that's hard. You just cut and paste from yesterday.
No.
And then you say you got the guests for me. The guests are built in on Tuesdays.
You didn't get
a single guest for me.
Because Bechtel told me the guests that had come in today that he wanted were Michael McHenry, who will join us at 1, Brian Bacco, who will join us at 11.
As always.
I put together... You asked for a list of topics,
Were you
so
not
I put
lounging
that
on a chair watching Walter Payton highlights? That's a yes or no question.
Because
yes
after
no.
I got all my work done...
Yes or no.
Ben was filming something, and he said, hey, you know, Dom, you might be in my way in the seat you were sitting in. And I said, okay. So I went back to the couch or whatever, and I wasn't watching TV. I was reading a Game of Thrones recap from the episode I watched last night.
Well, that's comforting. Well, thank you. And I'm only mildly implicating you. Now that I see all this, sadly, it's Jolie number one, Sean number two. You're a distant three. And then whatever mechanism
I think
we
Dan
use
is two.
Here.
I think Dan is two.
Should I start listening to every pirate? No, I can't. I can't do that. But we missed it. I missed it. And I'm angry and sad about that. But I learned in the newspaper business as well, what you do when you miss something is you acknowledge it if it's a big story. Not that you missed it necessarily, but you acknowledge that it's real and true. And then you expand on it. And then you move along. And that's what we're going to do today. Because this Skeens quote, I think, is a big first step for him. He has now shown that he is willing, very nicely, I might add. This reminded me of when Tomlin benched George Pickens last year. I believe it was against the Cowboys when his snaps went way down. And he called it a case of snap management and said, everything's fine with George. No, you benched him. But you went into a litany of euphemisms to try to explain why you benched him and never actually said you benched him. So this is Skeens essentially telling Bob Nutting, you didn't do anything to help the team. What are we doing here? And we better do something and do it soon. But he said it all very nicely. The most important thing, the significance of this, is that Paul Skeens has shown he's willing to call out management, ownership, nicely so far. This was a little bit of sparring here early in the boxing match. But Paul Skeens just doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's going to pull punches later on. If we're in a position next year like this, all bets are off with this guy. All bets are off. Let's take a listen to the quote. The question comes from Zangrilli, who's also mildly implicated here, I might add. The question is from Zangrilli, and this is the answer.
Closer versus farther away, what's your sense as to where this team is at in that respect?
I would argue both to an extent, because we are very close, but we need to consciously and intentionally make moves to get us better. I think that's...
Stop. You know, stop. We need to consciously and intentionally make moves to make us better. That is a giant quote from Paul Skeens. Nicely put, euphemistically put, but that is a giant quote from your best player. And the way that I interpret it, like, you know, if you have words, you know, something comes to you in Spanish, you put it through Google Translator, it comes out the other side, roughly translated sometimes. But I'll put this through the Pomp and Joe translator, and it comes out, to me at least, as get off your ass and do something while I'm still here. Spend some money, make some trades, get some players while I'm still here and while I'm still being relatively quiet about it. Do you agree? What would your translation be?
Exactly, exactly what you just said. I was surprised too when I saw that he said this, and he said it in the most nicest possible way that he could say it. But 100%, this is him saying, I'm looking at where this team is right now. We should be way better than where we're at. And yeah, I don't know how many more years I have left here. Let's try and make the most of them.
Yeah, I don't think that we're taking too many liberties there. So let me hear it again. It's Sangrilli saying, you know, are you closer or further away from contention, basically? And this is the whole answer.
Closer versus farther away, what's your sense as to where this team is at in that respect?
I would argue both to an extent, because we are very close, but we need to consciously and intentionally make moves to get us better. I think that's, you know, something that we might have been a victim of in the offseason a little bit, just because we have guys that can get better, you know, on the pitching side and offensively. That seemed like that was the goal and the, you know, the outlook during the offseason. Not that we made some moves, but there are guys that we have now that can get better, that will get better, but we have to make it happen. And then obviously going out there and, you know, trading for guys, signing guys, who knows from there. But I think it's something that we have to be conscious and intentional about.
Okay. So when he says the first part of that, we are very close, but we need to consciously and intentionally make moves to get us better. I think that's something that we might have been a victim of in the offseason a little bit. They weren't a victim of, they victimized themselves, is what he's saying there, is basically we didn't do crap in the offseason and look at us now. And again, I don't think I'm taking liberties. He says that very nicely. We might have been a victim of what? Well, he just said, we need to consciously and intentionally make moves to get us better. So we might have been a victim of that, I guess, a victim of unconsciously going about our offseason and not making moves to get us better, which everybody knows right now. So I'm still sitting here angry that one was missed. But who cares? We move along. Now it's on the record. Now it's out there. And now I think the world is, you know, aggregating that quote as they do so people can see it, which they should. And the real importance of it to me is that Paul Skenes has now opened that door. He's opened the door where he's going to be willing to call things as he sees them. And I know, you know, with a military background, he is likely inclined to sort of toe the line and be a good soldier, so to speak. There's that part of him. And there's also the part of him, this is not the military, this is pro sports. There's also that part of him where he ain't going to watch, you know, BS happening and not call it out. And that part's going to win as a member of the Pirates. And I think what he said Sunday was the first step in that direction. Off the Top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the fan text line on which you can communicate with my friend ID, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Intern Dom is a little bit long. Do you mind if I shorten it to ID?
Yeah, sure.
I have a player the Pirates should get in the meantime. Here's the other thing that's really boggling my mind. We watched Mitch Keller last night, okay? I like Mitch Keller. I don't want that to be misconstrued. Mitch Keller is a middle of the order or a middle of the rotation pitcher. That's what he is. He's not a one. He's barely a two, if you want to call him that. Mitch Keller has not a short history, but a long history of crumbling as summers roll on. He has yet to prove he can finish. Therefore, Mitch Keller right now, And who knows if last night signifies what we've seen in his past, but that was not good. Mitch Keller, right now, his value will never be higher because of the years of control he still has left at a very reasonable price. That dwindles every single day. And because he's pitching as well or better than he ever has right now, last night excluded. Trade him now. The other thing driving me nuts is, oh, you'll get a better deal in the off season. I just went through the history of deadline blockbusters. Teams get desperate this time of year. One of the greatest baseball trades I've ever seen was made at the deadline a couple years ago when the Nationals got rid of Juan Soto, sent him to the Padres, who had him for like 6 seconds before they got rid. They couldn't pay him, or he didn't want to get paid by them. Whatever. He was there for 6 seconds. The Nationals got a guy who's better than Juan Soto right now in James Wood, a 6'7" superstar in the making slugger, already a star. They got Abrams, all-star shortstop, and they got one of the best strikeout pitchers in all of baseball. So please don't tell me, and I could go through the litany, but I don't want to bore you, of blockbuster trades that happen every year at the deadline and are more likely in some cases to happen because everybody's drunk with the idea that, yeah, we can contend, especially with 3 wild cards. So the overvaluing of Keller and the idea that the off season is the time to trade him, stop, because right now at the trade deadline, you don't see these kinds of blockbusters. Better in the off season. I'm not buying it. Here are Mitch Keller's ERAs from the past 4 Septembers and August. So that's 8 months total. You ready? Are you ready, intern Dom?
I'm ready.
Last year, September, 6.66, August, 6.65, 2023, September, 5.28, August, 4.20, 2022, September, he was very good, 1.8, August, 4.7, 2021, September, 4.91, August, 6.20, 7 out of 8 months, he's been bad to horrendous for the ends of summers. Those final 8 starts, the biggest starts of the year, really, if you're on a contender. Trade him now, and I have a name in mind. I have a name in mind. I called out a guy who called into the show yesterday. You'll probably claim you heard it, intern Dom, but you didn't. We've all gone over the names. There's not many of them out there, especially established hitters with years of control. They're few and far between. So if you're not going to go for a guy like Owen Casey, who I would, by the way, from the Cubs, who's knocking on the door, I want a AAA prospect who is being blocked right now, who could immediately step into your lineup. One would think, you know, it's a fair point to say Henry Davis is Mickey Mantle at AAA. He's batting like 0 in the majors right now. I mean, it's painful to watch. Henry Davis taking at bat. Jack Sawinski's a AAA hero. He stinks in the majors. Lots of guys are like that. But that's another thing that bugs me, is to put everybody in the same bucket of, oh, well, Jack Sawinski, he's great in AAA. Just because you're great in AAA doesn't mean you're great in the majors. Okay, that's obvious. Just because you're great in college doesn't mean you'd be great in the pros in the NFL. There's also a lot of guys who are great, who rocket through a system in baseball and immediately make an impact. I'm willing to take that risk for a guy like Owen Casey, but I have a name for you. And if you watch Sunday Night Baseball, you saw Buster Olney talking about it. He was talking about the Reds and the Red Sox and teams like that being interested in Yandy Diaz. I'm interested in Yandy Diaz. I can tell you that. He has, first of all, an extremely nutting-friendly contract. I don't know how they got him to sign for this. The guy is making like barely $10 million a year. He got MVP votes in 22 and 23. He's almost 34. I get that. But it's not like guys, especially DHs, can't continue to hit into their mid and late 30s. And this guy hits. and Olney was saying the Reds should jump on board here. There is a widely held belief, it seems, in baseball where the Rays are willing to deal this guy. They're only like two and a half, three games out of wild card contention, but they're barely over 500. Plus, they're smart. They're always moving guys like this for guys who can help them now and, more importantly, in the future. That's why they're such a brilliant organization. So they've got a guy about to turn 34 that maybe they can parlay into assets that help them more moving forward. I get it. The Pirates should almost treat this like they're a contending team. They've got to go out and get a hitter like they're trying to win the World Series this year, only it's next year. So the guy has to have years of control. So Diaz does. He signed through next season with a club option for 27. Beautiful. That fits the scheme's window perfectly. Perfectly. Give me Yandy Diaz, please. He would immediately walk in here and be the Pirates' best hitter. He's hitting 285 with an 814 OPS, 18 home runs, and 62 ribbies. Every year, he's like a metronome, incredibly consistent every single year. And as I mentioned, as recently as 2023, I believe it was, he was hitting 330 with monster numbers and getting MVP votes. So if people are going to talk about the Reds jumping in on this guy, why shouldn't the Pirates? Yes, he plays mostly DH. I don't care. I said going into this season, last year at this time, I was saying they should scratch all, and well, probably not at this time because they were still alive at this time, but after the 10-game losing streak and all that, scratch when they're doing their depth chart, their off-season depth chart, scratch positions from everybody's name. I don't want to hear about positions anymore. I want to hear about bats. Got to have bats. If that means the end of Andrew McCutchen as DH, I love McCutchen as much as anybody else, but you're getting a clear upgrade here. Maybe it just means that Diaz will have to play more first base. He hasn't played much of that in Tampa. I don't care. I certainly don't care about Spencer Horwitz. He's been everything that Keith Law told the world he would be the day the Pirates acquired him, which is underwhelming. To put it mildly, he's a first baseman who doesn't hit for power. He really doesn't hit much at all, actually, but he doesn't hit for power. So I don't care about that. McCutchen, it might be his last year anyway, but if it means moving on from McCutchen to bring in Diaz next season, great. This is a guy that they should circle, that they should pencil in. I've been saying for a long time, if you're going to trade Keller, trade him for a guy with a like resume as a hitter. This is the guy, except he's probably got a better resume as a hitter than Keller does as a pitcher. Couple years of control left, 2 years. It's time. ID, your thoughts on Yandy Diaz?
I like the thought. I like the creativity. Pony tweeted out about an hour ago that there's a Pirates rumor going around that the Rays have expressed interest in Jack Sawinski. So I have no idea if these two are connected in any way.
Is your car on right now? I will jump in your car, go get Jack Sawinski in San Francisco, realizing that's a long drive, and drive him wherever he needs to go.
You would do that trade?
The Jack Sawinski for who?
Yandy Diaz.
Are you kidding? That's not a real thing. Did Pony mean Yandy Diaz?
No, but I'm connecting the dots here.
No dots to connect there. I'm sorry if I misled you. I don't care where Jack Sawinski is going. I'll drive him there. Key Brian Hayes the same. If they can free up $7-8 million to go sign somebody else this offseason and Key Brian Hayes is no longer here, I'll drive him somewhere. I cannot watch Key Brian Hayes hit anymore. I was watching the game last night with my wife. I'm like, oh my God, Key Brian Hayes is walking to the plate again. It's just a nightly occurrence. He just saunters up to the plate, hits a weak line drive to the second baseman, hits into a double play, tops another ball to the pitcher, pops out with men on base. You talk about a metronome. I can't watch it anymore. What is it? That, to me, is the most infuriating pirate sight that there is. What infuriates you more than anything else when you're watching the Pirates intern, Dom? Because I know there's a temper in there, and I know you don't, you're angry, aren't you? You're angry with the Pirates.
Yes.
But what scene or sight that has a somewhat regular occurrence on that whole team infuriates you more than anything?
I mean,
is it seeing Jack Sawinski back here?
I mean, easily it's not scoring runs for Paul Skeens. I know it just happened a couple days ago, but that's number one.
I'm talking more specifically involving a player, manager.
Probably Key Brian Hayes.
Yeah.
Ben Sherrington still having a job infuriates me.
Yes, it does.
But
yes, it does.
But you see why I connected the dots where Pony's saying Rays are interested in Sawinski.
Well, that's fine.
You're saying you're interested in
Yadier. I know,
Yadier
you
Diaz.
Connected dots, but that you're talking about a guy who is one of the most consistent hitters in all of baseball. I think Sawinski, that's great that they're
but
interested.
But if the Pirates
I'll
have
give
somebody...
him Sawinski and Keller, if that's the case. But my point is I'd go Keller straight up for Diaz in a second. Would you out there at 412-928-9370? While we're at it, Which facet of the Pirates in particular? I know it's Bob Nutting's ownership. That's an obvious answer. But I'm talking about you're on your couch at home and something in particular that happens with regularity infuriates you. For me, it's Key Brian Hayes simply walking to the plate because I know very shortly he's going to walk back. I've never seen anything like it in my life. That lineup last night, by the way, again, and I've said this a number of times, that lineup last night was a fireable offense for Ben Sherrington. What an unbelievable embarrassment. And I don't care how many runs they scored. It's baseball on a given night you can score, although they rarely do. Tommy Pham batting leadoff, followed by McCutchen, Gonzalez, Cruz, Hayes batting fifth, Canario with Sawinski batting for him, Peguero with Horwitz batting for him, Henry Davis, and IKF. That's about as bad as it gets. And even if Tommy Pham is hitting, the fact that you're in year six and you're whatever you are, 17 games under 500, and Tommy Pham is leading off a game for you is an unbelievable indictment of your GM. The whole thing is just such a massive embarrassment. Key Brian Hayes is batting fifth in your lineup. What are you doing? How has this happened? He's batting 197 in the month of July after he had an okay. He actually batted 300 in June. But overall, you go back to May, 200. Overall, he's a third baseman who can't hit. He has two home runs. Your first baseman has like four. Your second baseman has six. Your shortstop has one. Listen, we put the over-under at 37.5 for the entire infield before the season, and I picked under, and I think I'm going to be right. What was I talking about before that? Diaz. What do people think of that? Is everybody going to pick a problem with that now at 412-928-9370? Everybody wants all these trades, and then when it's time to start making them, nobody wants to make them. And the whole thing of, oh, my God, Mitch Keller, imagine him and Skeens, you got to keep them at the top of your rotation. No, I don't. They had both guys pitching great this year, and they're 17 games under 500 with one of the worst offenses we've ever seen. Parlay him into a bat. This guy is a bat. 928-9370. It's time. Not the offseason. Right now. It's time to trade Bednar. It's time to trade Keller. The rest of them I don't care about. You know, I'm not interested in Tommy Pham bringing back a low-A prospect for the Greens. The Grasshoppers are our team, right? That's who Connor Griffin plays for.
Correct.
I'm not interested in any of that. I don't care who Andrew Heaney gets back. It's time to make a big move or two right now, right this second, this week, by Thursday at 6 p.m. And good on Paul Skeens that he has essentially called out the management and ownership of this team. Good on him. Your thoughts at 928-9370. Fan Twitter, as I mentioned, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Let's have a frank and real discussion about the state of the Pirates and how they can change things. Diaz walks through that building tomorrow. He's their best hitter going into next season. Now, all of a sudden, you have a highly respected professional impact bat right in the middle of your lineup. And even one makes a difference. Even one can make a big difference. You have to count on Reynolds bouncing back next year because of the track record. Cruz, he's a wild card, but he also wins you games. He's also going to have probably about 25 to 30 homers somewhere in that neighborhood and 50 stolen bases. I think I'll keep him. And then you can start talking about, well, maybe later in the year, Connor Griffin, maybe you free up the key Brian Hayes money, which I know isn't a ton, but you free up his money, you free up Keller's money, and he's making more, significantly more, I think, than Diaz. And maybe, just maybe, you can go out and get a respectable bat in the offseason. Not a high-priced one, but something other than Adam Frazier or Tommy Pham. Something has to be done. It's Pomp and Joe. Yandy Diaz, let's go back, oh, I don't care, to 2021. 740 OPS that year and only 13 homers. Then he comes back, hits nearly 300 with an 824 OPS. And then in 2023, he just erupts. 330, he bats, 932 OPS, 6th in the MVP voting. That's a mere two seasons ago, his age 31 season. Last year comes back with 14 homers, 65 ribbies, 341 on base percentage, 755 OPS, hits 281. Okay, that's pretty good. And now this year, after a rough start, again, he's back up to 283, career 288 hitter. Is it 814 OPS? He's got 18 homers. So he would lead the Pirates in various categories, like every one of them. You know, we're not talking about, David Ortiz or something here, but we're talking about a guy who would be the best hitter on the Pirates. And by the way, I just threw out Keller. That may not be what the Rays want. Keller's salary is very manageable for most teams. The Rays might not want to spend that, even that kind of money, on Mitch Keller over the next couple of years. Maybe they're looking for a younger arm. Obviously, I'm not parting ways with a Bubba Chandler in a situation like this, but what about a young, lively arm like a Braxton Ashcraft and Sawinski? If, as Pony reported, or said other people were reporting, that they're interested in Sawinski, God bless them. Please, yes. Maybe Bednar also brings you back a different kind of bat, maybe a younger bat. And then going into next season, you can sort of reconfigure. Do I trust Ben Cherington on any of this? No. But that's another thing that's bugging me these days is people saying you can't make moves because you can't trust the GM. So what are you supposed to do? Nothing? I don't trust him on free agent bats either, but if he's still the guy this offseason, he better be going after some free agent bats not named Tommy Frazier or Tommy Frazier.
Not named Tommy Frazier.
Yeah, just combine Tommy Pham and Adam Frazier and you have the former Nebraska quarterback, Tommy Frazier. I don't trust him on anything, but he's still here. So he's got to, you can't just sit there and do nothing. Let's go to the phone lines, please.
Yes, let's go to Greg in Youngstown.
Hello, Greg.
Now you're making sense. With Diaz, that makes sense. You know, I would trade my whole minor league system except for Griffin and Chandler for veterans right now. I would trade every single one. I would restock my minor league eventually. We got to start trading minor leaguers instead of trading veterans
Would you trade Termar Johnson and Ashcraft for Diaz?
Oh, yeah. Today. I'd pull the plug right now. I would do it right now.
Would you ID?
I'd heavily consider it, yes.
I realize Johnson is a bat and one that you drafted very highly, but it's been kind of and he's still very young. I wouldn't love that. I'd rather trade what I have a surplus of in pitching, but yeah, I think
Johnson I would not do, no.
The idea here is to try to maximize the Skeens era. Greg, you still there?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Here's the thing. We've gone down this road trading veterans for minor leaguers, and it hasn't worked. Let's go the opposite route. Let's trade minor leaguers for veterans. We got Skeens for 2 or 3 years. Let's go for it. Why are we trying to develop another player when somebody's already developed? Let's go for it. I mean, this organization has tried to go on the cheap all the time. And okay, I'll get a AAA player, and he's going to pan out. Usually it doesn't happen. As Poppy Andy says all the time, you're just getting the prospect. That's all you're getting. I want players that have at least played in the majors if I can.
Well, this guy has not only played, as I've mentioned a couple times, he was 6th in the MVP vote 2023. The real question
take him.
How did he only sign for 12 and 10 million the next couple of years? And the second year is a club option. Both years are actually club options now that I look at it. I appreciate the call, Greg.
Okay,
go ahead.
Thanks.
Go ahead. Is he gone?
He's gone.
I'm sorry. I felt like I cut him off. Now I feel horrible.
By the way, Mitch Keller, the next 3 years, 2026, 27, 28, will be making $17 million, $18 million, $20
million. Yeah. So maybe the Rays don't want to go for that much. Maybe they do. You know, there have been times where they've shelled out a little bit of money, but maybe they're more interested in, listen, if they're interested in Sawinski, like I said, here's a plane ticket to Tampa, and maybe a younger arm, you know, take your pick other than the prized people like Chandler, obviously. This is the type of deal they need desperately. Next.
Dave in Chalk Hill.
Dave where?
Chalk Hill.
Chalk Hill?
That's Dave. Is that what you? That's where you said you're from, correct?
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. That's up near Nemacolin. It's up near Farmington.
Oh, very nice. North. What's on your mind?
Okay, I agree. Hey, I'd trade Keller for that Diaz. I mean, he's the best one. These prospects, I mean, they don't seem to hit on him. I'd trade Keller, and if the Rays think if they want Sawinski, they've already figured out how to fix his swing.
Well, you might be right. You actually might be right about that. But, you know, what's the point of having him here if his swing won't get fixed here? That's my point. And Key Brian Hayes is another one. That would be addition by subtraction. Look at some of the averages that were in that game for the Pirates last night. And I realize that, you know, batting average is sort of an old school stat for people. But it still is kind of an indication of whether you can hit or whether you can't for the most part, isn't it? And look at some of these people they put on the field in year 6 of a massive rebuild where all you've done is try to bring in prospects, younger players, draft picks. The lineup began with, how old is Pham? 37? With two 37-year-olds in Tommy Pham and McCutcheon. Gonzalez has been doing okay. He's okay. Then Cruz as your cleanup guy. Then you have Hayes at 236 with a 279 on base, which is horrific. Then you have the canary in the coal mine at 212, and man, did he put on a clinic on how not to play right field last night. Then you have Sawinski at 109. Then you have Peguero playing a position he's never played. He did make a nice play. And then you have Horwitz. Then you have Hank Davis at 173. And as Yogi Berra said, it's getting late early out there with him. And I hate to say this out loud, but he looks like a bust. I'm pretty much willing to go there. He looks like he's going to be a good defensive catcher or, you know, above average defensive catcher who can't hit. There's no indication that this guy can handle major league pitching. And if he hits like this, you know, I mean, Jacob Stallings looks like Johnny Bench compared to him. He just can't hit. Dumb.
Yeah, I mean, for a first overall pick, he has been as disappointing, I think, as you could possibly have imagined. He has a negative career WAR, 12 career home runs, 186 career batting average, is as boring an interview as you could possibly ask for. Yeah, he's...
Well, I don't care about the interview part.
I thought I'd throw that out there for context.
He's a bust right now.
I agree.
He's a bust.
And that's a strong word to use.
Yeah, I don't know that people are willing to say that yet, but he is. And to make matters even worse, Joey Bart has turned into Joey Bart again. He has one home run. This is a disaster. I mean, it's a disaster.
You know, think about this, Joe. I was mulling this over in my mind a few days ago, and I think I even tweeted something out about this. I think 2026, and tell me what you think, is going to be the most important year in the history of the franchise, because it's going to be a season ahead of potentially a year-long lockout. It could be your last chance to impress Paul Skeens and show him you can build a winner. It might be a season with a new manager, a new GM, could be Andrew McCutchen's final season. Connor Griffin might make his debut. Hell, even, you know, PNC Park's lease comes up in 2030. They're going to have to make a decision on that sometime soon. It could come next year. 2026 could be for all the marbles, man. Seriously.
Wait a second. Are you intimating that the Pirates could leave town?
No, I'm saying that I think a decision on their home is going to have to come at least somewhat soon, depending on what they want to do.
What do you mean?
If they want to build a new stadium, if they want to stay where they're at.
I can't see a new stadium being built. The place still looks like it's brand new. It's one of the nicest venues in sports.
I agree. But
the other stuff I completely hear. And next year is an incredibly pivotal season for this franchise. And I know I've said they're close. Skeens said that too. When you have Skeens and you have pitching, you are by definition close. You need a couple of big bats. Where the hell do you get them? Well, here's one. Here's one. Yandy Diaz. Get him. Go get him. And then try to figure out some stuff in the offseason. I'm just so sick and tired of the auditions, the Canarios and the Sawinskis and the Pigueros and the Horwitzes. Come on. Your big offseason addition was Spencer Horwitz. What are you doing? Why does Bob Nutting let this happen? That was your big deal? Bring in a first baseman who everybody knows can't hit for power?
So do you get why people are frustrated that Ben Sherrington is the guy still making these deadline
moves? Of course
moves?
I do. Yes.
I get your point, but it's like...
Of course I do. He should have been fired with Shelton, but he's here. So somebody's got to do it.
It's like the captain of the Titanic getting another chance to steer a boat.
If I'm Bob Nutting going into this, I'm firing Sherrington. I am. The fact that he was allowed to run this draft and this deadline is borderline surreal. But if I'm inclined not to for some reason, like I don't know what the reason would be, I'm bringing in a senior consultant this offseason and saying, you're going to help this guy make decisions and you're going to have a big voice. Now, the fact that I would feel the need to do that, again, would indicate that Sherrington should be fired. As I wrote earlier this season and said, he is in the conversation for worst general manager in the history of Pittsburgh sports. The history of Pittsburgh sports. Who's next?
Let's go to Nick in the car.
Hello, Nick.
Hi, Joe. Really appreciate your points of view and your candor here. Finally, somebody bringing some sanity to this discussion about the Pirates.
Well, to be fair, Nick, everybody talks about the same thing. I think there's a perception among fans that somehow the media isn't like all over the Pirates every year for most of the past quarter century. And we are. All of us are. Everybody is. I think some media people want to point to others and say, oh, they don't go after the Pirates. Who doesn't go after the Pirates? That's like the initiation here. Is that's the first thing you do when you walk into Pittsburgh as a media member because of their rampant incompetence. But go ahead.
No, you're exactly right. And I guess I was referring more to the fan base, if I can be honest. I read these comments on Twitter about how can you trade Mitch Keller? Oh, my God, how can you trade David Bednar? Blah, blah, blah. And we can do just as well in the offseason. I've never stood by that point of view, that argument. I think it's stupid. I give you an example. It's a different sport, but Ricard Raquel, this last past deadline in National Hockey League, oh, you can't trade him. My God, he's got 35 goals, and you'll get more in the offseason when 20
right.
teams are looking for him.
Right.
Well, here we are in August, almost August, and nobody's biting on him.
I agree with you 1,000%. I really do. And I've said it. all week long that teams are more desperate and more liable to give you more now. I don't buy that off-season crap. And there have been so many blockbuster deals. I was looking up some of them today, from Randy Johnson going to Houston, CC Sabathia to the Brewers, Manny Ramirez to the Dodgers. Here's the punchline on this one. ESPN had a listing of deadline blockbusters. The trade, Ramirez to the Dodgers in 08, as part of a three-way trade with the Red Sox and Pirates. The Dodgers traded Andy LaRoche and Brian Morris for Ramirez. Oh, my God.
What a deal.
What a deal. Max Scherzer to the Dodgers in 2021. Mark McGwire got traded, Sakes. And I mentioned earlier that huge, one of the greatest trades in baseball history, I actually think, certainly recent history, was the Nationals getting rid of Juan Soto, who's still a very good player. But they got three all-stars, potentially. One superstar hitter who right now is probably better than Juan Soto and James Wood. That happened on August 2nd, what, 2 years ago? So get that out of your minds if you're thinking that, if people are telling you that. Mitch Keller crumbles every summer. I hope last night wasn't a step in his usual direction for August and September. Now's the time to trade him. Now's the time to trade a young arm or two as well. And Bednar, all of that to bring in some bats. It's time. Let's go to one more call.
Dylan in Indiana.
Hello, Dylan.
How are you, Joe?
I've never been better. You?
I'm terrible.
Hmm.
The Pirates are an embarrassment. I don't think people realize how easy it is to truly fix this. If Ben Cherington was competent, people don't realize the value for high leverage relievers right now. If you look out into Major League Baseball, Emmanuel Clase, he's done, obviously. I think everyone knows that at this point.
That's a pretty good
David
bet.
David Bednar has the value of a top five prospect. If you called the Detroit Tigers, I saw a report where the Pirates are scouting the Erie Seawolves, the Tigers AA affiliate. Get Kevin McGonigal in here. He's the sixth best prospect in baseball.
How about John McGonigal, who used to cover Pitt for the Post-Gazette? Do you know of Kevin McGonigal limits?
No.
I don't know if I want a double-A guy. I want a triple-A guy who's knocking on the door and will step right into the lineup like this Owen Casey or Spencer Jones in the Yankees organization.
Here's my absolute foolproof plan. You give David Bednar or Dennis Santana to the Philadelphia Phillies for Otto Kemp, third baseman. He's historically hit for power in the minor leagues. He's 24 years old. You get him in here. Dave Dombrowski, if he says no to that, he needs to be fired right away. He steps in here as your third baseman next year. You also go to Edmundo Sosa, sign him for an extremely cheap deal. He's an absolute gamer. Play him at shortstop next year. And then if you look at left field...
Why hasn't Otto Kemp really played in the majors that much yet? He's 25 years old.
Yeah, well, that's because Alec Bohm got injured. He wasn't really expected to get up this fast, but I feel like he'll be fine.
All right, I like your plan so far as it goes, mostly because Key Brian Hayes won't be here anymore. It's just, I can't watch it anymore. Intern Dom, I just can't watch 500, 600 at-bats of that every year. It's maddening.
It's the whole lineup that's maddening. By the way, Otto Kemp had a 2-home-run game a couple days ago.
If he's your next third baseman, good. I don't even know who he is. Just bring him in here and let him play third. All right. We'll get back to that trade deadline talk. Who knows? We may have a trade today for all we know. But up next, Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette, live from La Trobe, before they go into hitting today. They put on the pads today. I want to ask Brian about multiple issues, including who he feels will be the primary ball toter in Game 1, and also his early impressions of Aaron Rodgers. First, fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Slight chance of rain this afternoon. Sunny with a high of 90 and a low of Evgeny Malkin at 71. 50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. It's very rarely Pomp and Joe.